Did you know an estimated 40% of Americans deal with itchy eyes due to allergic conjunctivitis from both seasonal and year-round allergies? The good news is the prescription-strength formula of Lasticaft Alkaftadine Ophthalmic Solution 0.25% is now available over-the-counter. These antihistamine eye drops provide 16 hours of relief from itchy allergy eyes, with one drop working in just 3 minutes. Lasticaft's one-of-a-kind patented formula works against pet dander, pollen, grass, and ragweed, and is approved for ages 2 and above. Each bottle of Lasticaft once daily relief comes in a 60-day supply, which is 2 times the amount per bottle compared to Pataday once daily eye relief. Lasticaft can be purchased in-store and online at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, and Amazon. So when it comes to itchy allergy eyes, no matter the season, it's Lasticaft season. Visit Lasticaft.com to learn more about Lasticaft and reasons to recommend it this allergy season. Use as directed.
This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Defocus Media podcast. We're doing a daytime show today. And I've got with me my friend and expert guest, Dr. Melanie Denton. Dr. Denton, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jen. Thanks for having me. So we're having today, we're having a mom life one today because we can't do this at night.
We were just talking earlier, but it is so hard to record in the evening when you got your kids and bedtime and you got to get dinner on the table. So thank you guys for tuning in early for our daytime episode. And you can always check out, obviously, this podcast at any time. But how's mom life going, Dr. Denton?
It's good. I mean, it's crazy. She decided to get new teeth last week. So that was a surprise. I thought we were done with that. But she's telling me, I'm growing new teeth. I'm growing a new mouth. I'm like, okay.
How old is your little girl now?
She'll be 3 in July.
Okay. Yeah. Mine just turned 3. So we're right there at it. They're really good at telling you everything that bothers them.
Yeah, which is great, because that used to be really tough to be like, what is it? Is it her stomach? Is it her foot? Like, what? Why is she upset? But at least now I know.
Yeah, maybe it's a small paper cut that clearly needs a Band-Aid. That's what's wrong.
Yes. There's a monster. There's a monster Band-Aid on my shin right now because she had to put it on me this morning. So.
You know what? Dealing with toddlers and dealing with dry eye patients, maybe not all that different, because as we'll talk about today, dry eye is a challenging thing to diagnose and prescribe, and our patients oftentimes are in such miserable discomfort. It kind of feels like, you know, the person constantly telling us, like, I need this, it's not working. And effective dry eye treatment, I think, is a big challenge for all of us, where we get it, you know, dry is one of the more popular specialties because our patients, we know they have it, but to get them effectively comfortable can be a very difficult proposition. What drew you to dry eye, Dr. Denton?
I mean, I think like a lot of people, so I've been in practice since 2009 and I have seen my patients change a lot. The prevalence of dry eye has skyrocketed, and the demographics of who it's actually affecting are so much different than it was in 2009 when I started in practice. So I can remember being in the dry eye clinic at Duke and like seeing all these patients with really severe dry eye, but they would have Sjogren's and rheumatoid arthritis and all of these other systemic issues. And now I'm seeing it in just about everybody. Younger patients have it, contact lens wearers. I feel like rosacea is much more prevalent. I don't have stats to back that up, but I'm seeing so much rosacea and ocular rosacea in my clinic. And so people just are not using their eyes like they did even 10 years ago. And it seems like dry eye is everywhere. And then I also find that patients are just like dealing with it and normalizing their symptoms. So, and then I also really like, so I feel like sometimes, I mean, I did a residency at Bascom Palmer And we learned so much about macular issues and retinal issues and ocular oncology clinic. And I think what always frustrated me about some of those specialties was that I can't do anything about it. All I can do is like be really good at diagnosing it. But like I have to be like, okay, well, you have to go on to somebody else. And one thing I love about dry eye is that I can design my clinic to be an end of the line clinic, right? Like there's nothing that I really can't do that I would have to refer out to a corneal specialist or something. I mean, even like neurotrophic cases anymore with the addition of Oxervate and amniotic membranes and things, I really can be end of the line and do something about it. And so I just personally love that because I love being able to actively help people and kind of not just be the one that's like, all right, well, you got to go somewhere else.
So true. This is an optometry specialty, true and true, that there's no limitations on our scope that would prevent us to be able to practice to the absolute utmost of dry eye care.
Yeah.
Before we dive in a little bit more about your practice, I wanted to just give a shout out to Allergan for making this episode today possible. They're one of our partners at Defocus Media, and we appreciate their support in bringing this episode to you. Dr. Denton, I want to hear about your practice in Salisbury because you've really built a destination for dry eye at your private practice, and you had recently kind of done a big move and remodel. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I started my practice cold in Salisbury in 2016, and the initial focus was just get it off the ground, like get routine patients coming in and build an actual practice. But then I always had in the back of my mind, and I would say to my team, the dream is that I will see dry eye patients all day, at least a few days a week. I want to be doing dry eye. And so from the beginning, I've had dry eye products in my practice. I've been very forward about looking for dry eye and treating dry eye. And I considered my specialist even before taking it kind of to the next level. In 2020, when the pandemic hit and everybody sort of had like time to think about things, I really looked inward and was like, I absolutely want to have a dry eye practice. This is my passion. It's what I really want to do day in and day out. And the only way that that happens is if I make it happen. So I then put out the capital outlay to buy an IPL, slit lamp imaging. I was like, all right, if I'm going to be successful with this, I have to have all the things in place. And in 2020 is when I really drew that line and was like, we are now a dry eye specialty practice. And then in early 2021, my financial advisor said, like, you're doing great. It is time for you to own a building. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. And I came across this 1895 Victorian house, which is now my practice. It's darling and it's very boutique and it's just wonderful. It fits very well with our practice culture, the boutique aspect of it. And it also is right in downtown. And so like, it's just very much the personality of the practice to be here. So it's been great. And when I designed it, I designed one of the rooms is kind of a huge room with a fireplace. And I designed it to be an aesthetic suite with a dry eye workup area. So I have my IPL in that room. That's where we're doing treatments, but it's also where we're doing dry eye assessments. So we're very much set up. I have two normal everyday routine exam rooms, and then I have this specialty dry eye suite.
So in growing the dry eye practice, obviously you purchasing equipment was a big outlay. How are you getting patient interest? Is it mostly internal referrals, external referrals?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think with like a lot of people, you have that list of like probably five people that you can rattle off that have tried everything, are totally ready to adapt to anything you're going to do. So like we went through that list of like, who are our people who really, really need this? And then we started mining our database and we just tweaked our systems on a daily basis with our routine patients. And for the first year and a half, all we had done was mine our own patients for dry eye. So really did not go external at all. And then I've just recently started a little bit of marketing, whether that be on Facebook or Google Ads. I do some of both of those. And then I also have proactively gone after some subspecialties. So I actually am not really going after other optometrists. I mean, I have reached out to some to refer to me for technology, but I've seen a lot more success with dermatology and rheumatology. So yeah, so dermatology, the prevalence of ocular rosacea, and just making them aware that we now have an FDA-approved treatment with Luminous IPL, and they're very receptive. My team did a lot of this marketing, and they said, dermatology is the happiest to be at work.
That's incredible. So dermatology theoretically has IPL treatments that they're offering in-house, but they're probably not doing eye-specific areas.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they may have the shields, but I don't know if they're comfortable, because they were very receptive to sending patients for IPL for ocular rosacea.
That's so fascinating to hear. We oftentimes think more of optometry and ophthalmology as referral sources, but clearly going in some unique ways can be an excellent source of driving patients. We recently, and this is something that I'm putting together, I'm working on right now, are, you know, growing again your private practice and getting the word out there about what you do. Obviously, we talk to local optometrists about our vision therapy referrals, our specialty contact lenses, ophthalmology we partner with, primary care doctors we reached out to about our diabetic eye care. But I'm putting together stuff to go to lash studios next to talk to lash providers about, hey, if you have patients with this redness, irritation, dry eye issues, we're happy to help care for your patients and support their lash journey.
Yes. Yes. I love that. You have to go, you have to really think about the patient. And if they're having issue A, who are they going to seek care from? Who are they going to go to first? And then try and go to that person and just make them aware of what we have available. Right. So I love that, because folks getting lash extensions, that's a perfect fit for promoting like Zest treatments or BLEFX type of treatments, microblepharic exfoliation.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your practice and how you kind of do things, because you got these dry eye patients. Let's start from the beginning. You're bringing them back after their routine exam for like a dry eye consultation workup. What are you doing at that appointment to kind of get a baseline of like, okay, here's where we're at and our next step for treatment plan is XXX?
So I'm a big, big, big believer in systems and making things dummy proof. And the dummy is me, not anybody else. I have designed a dry eye workup that is done every single time. So there's a huge history that's done, including like ocular surgeries that are done. We're asking about their symptoms day to day. We're asking about their incoming, like, you know, what are your habits and hygiene looking like right now? And then very importantly, I'm asking, what are your goals? Like, what, by seeing me, let's set a treatment goal. Because I found that in dry eye care, that is very different for everybody. So for me, as an end of the line dry eye specialist, my goal with these people is typically not zero staining, negative inflammatory, perfect 20-year-old eye, right? My goal is less obstruction, less inflammation, less staining. And the ultimate like qualifier of that is, how's your life? What is your quality of life like? And so we're setting very realistic goals and having true conversations with people about what is your goal in coming 2 hours from 2 hours away to see me? Like, what would me helping you look like? And sometimes that's, I'm an avid reader and I'm devastated because I can't read, you know, 30 minutes a day. Please help me be able to read again. Or I've had patients that don't feel comfortable driving, or that looks different for everybody. And I think finding out what that is very important. So really, really a directed history with an honest conversation with the patient about like where they've been, what they've been doing already, what their goals are. And then we do OSDI on everybody. And then I have a separate evaluation. So I'm not doing my dry eye evals in my normal exam tab. I have it separated into lids, tears, glands, and ocular surface, I think. So very, very directed about looking for BLEF, taking notes about the lids, looking at the tears. Tear breakup time is always done. So we're always doing, my tech does history, OSDI, corneal sensitivity, inflammatory, and Schirmer. before I come in the room. And then I'm very directed about lids, tears, glands, cornea. And then I'm making a plan, assessing their dry eye, you know, the severity, what I think is contributing to it. And then I prescribe according to, I have my own way of like thinking about it. So I think about it as three buckets of dry eye care. This is something I came up with. And so we follow, but we follow the same rubric every single time.
So yeah, tell me a little bit with your workup on this. Okay. I just want to get your opinion because I think these are great tools to be using. Schirmer's test versus tear breakup time. Do you feel like one is superior than the other, or they give you two different pieces of information? Because I think many of us are doing a tear breakup time, but doing a Schirmer's test is definitely like a next level.
Yeah, I mean, and Schirmer's is old school, and it's not perfect, but I try to quantify everything as much as I can because patients are very responsive to numbers, right? Like a lot of them like to know how things are progressing. And they're all, so Inflammadry is done because if you have inflammation, I'm going to be putting you on an immunomodulator or steroid or both, right? So it's a trackable thing. Schirmer's is done because now we have the ITR 100 for neurostimulation. We also have Tyrvaya, and I'm using that all the time. And so I'm doing that test because I can tell you quantifiably, I can quantify for you, well, you used to produce this amount of tears and now you produce this amount, right? So it's all very directed for me. And then the same with corneal sensitivity. So for me, just asking if you had LASIK, if you had cataract surgery, if you had retinal surgeries, isn't enough. We're doing corneal sensitivity because I'm prescribing a lot of Oxervate. And so again, when we do that post-treatment assessment, so I think of them like bookends. You know, I think we're all very good at like, all right, you're in it here for a routine vision. You have dry eye. You need to come back for our dry eye assessment. It's a completely different exam that I've put together to look at everything contributing to your dry eye and come up with a directed treatment plan for you. But no matter what treatment plan we're going to go with, whether it's IPL in the works or whether it's you're going to continue with good habits, I believe in accountability with dry eye, both for me and for the patient. So if you tell me I'm going to do, you know, hot compresses for 3 months. Cool. That's wonderful. But I'm also going to test your Inflammadry, Schirmer, everything in 3 months, and we're going to see where it's at. So that's kind of why and how that's designed that way and why I'm doing all those tests. We could argue like, meh, but probably tear breakup time is more important than Schirmer. To me, I think tear breakup is very important. Staining is very important. Inflammadry means a lot to me. And then my Bowman gland imaging is like gold. I love that.
I've got another shout out to put up here from Obi Maloof in South Africa. So we've got international people tuning in today on this episode. And y'all, this is definitely a live discussion. So we're happy to take questions as they come during the episode. Yeah. We're all here to learn from each other and we love seeing our colleagues participating. So, all right. So you got all of this information that you're gleaning. And as you've seen in your practice, like dry eye is so multifactorial. Many of our patients come in and it's not like they just have rosacea or they just have meibomian gland dysfunction. Many times they have every possible type of dry eye. And right, knowing where to start can be, that's like you said, many times people are like, okay, well, there's a lot going on. I don't know which path to go down first. And that's a moment that's make or break on getting a patient involved because you want to start with a treatment that the patient is going to get some improvement in their symptoms and signs right from the beginning to get them to kind of continue to go on with the next leg of treatment and the next leg of treatment. So where are you typically kind of starting at when you've got someone with a multifactorial dry eye disease presentation?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is why dry eye is so much fun. Because it's a different puzzle that you have to put together for every single patient. So it's a combination of different things. But I would say one of the most important things I did as a practitioner was to sit down and really think about my treatment algorithm. So that's going to vary from person to person, but I highly recommend this for anybody starting a dry eye clinic. You got to sit down and go, if mild anterior blepharitis, I will be recommending this lid scrub. If it's moderate to severe, I'm always going to tell them about an in-office, either a chemical exfoliant or a mechanical exfoliant, like a microbluffer exfoliation, you know, so, and the same with gland obstruction and the same with staining. You sort of have to develop in your own mind, what is my threshold? Because if you don't come up with your own algorithm, you're going to be all over the place and you're going to have varied results. And that's something that I kind of went through too. Like sometimes I would prescribe Restasis. Sometimes if I was like, you know, not, if I thought maybe the patient didn't have the money or didn't have good insurance or something, I wouldn't. Or I would like, you know, just not even go down the path. Or they have obstruction, but I don't want to have the price conversation, or I don't know if we're there yet. When you think about your algorithm, you just see the signs and the symptoms and you go, you're there. It's indicated. And so my team can talk to you about the rest of how we make that happen. But like, I'm going to tell you about it because it's the best thing for you. And I truly believe it's the best thing for you because I sat there and thought about my algorithm with a cup of coffee on my own. So I just highly recommend doing that because every clinic will have different over-the-counter products and things available to them. But I strongly feel you need to have done that. The second thing is to stop overcomplicating dry eye because you can overcomplicate it so badly. And ultimately, there's two things you're treating, and that's it, inflammation and obstruction. And if you treat those two things, people are going to feel better. So don't make it so hard. Like, are you treating those or not? And what are you doing for each thing, right?
I love that because like you, that's a great way of breaking it down and a way that a patient can truly understand it, right? In your clinical opinion, do you treat inflammation and obstruction at the same time? Do you do one first and then the other?
I do them both at the same time. Yeah. I say it's kind of twofold. We have to be going after both because if I go after your inflammation, but I don't clear your obstruction, you're just going to continue to have inflammation. You know, I'm just quieting it temporarily. So if we want to make real progress, in my opinion, you got to go after both.
Got it.
So, and then I have this, like the three treatment buckets are kind of what I talk to patients about. So bucket one is habits and hygiene. That's like hot compresses, taking fish oil, drinking water, using a humidifier, pointing your fans away from you. It's all the, I call it like DIY. That's all the DIY stuff that you can do. And then bucket two are your prescription options. That's Restasis, Inciqua, Inxiidra, Tyrvaya, Doxycycline, Secretagogues, you know, Evazac and Saligen. It's all that stuff. And then the third bucket are the advanced procedures that I can do in my clinic, IPL, low-level light therapy, gland expression. And in my opinion, you really have to draw from all three buckets to have the most successful dry eye treatment. So that's kind of how I talk to patients about it.
I love how you kind of make us straightforward. Like you said, try to simplify the approach. These are our treatment protocols, and these are the presentations that you have, and you're going to need all of these things, and there is no cure. This is something that's right. A chronic lifelong condition, but we can help not cure the condition, but reach your goals of that we've outlined at the beginning of this conversation of being able to read longer without your eyes burgeoning seeing, for example, or returning you to that better, more consistent vision so you feel safer driving. Do you find that there are certain patients where you would say, all right, let's, you know, over-the-counter approach is initial step one for you. And what is your go-to kind of over-the-counter regimen for a patient? If you were thinking, oh, your symptoms are mild enough, we might be able to stay away from a prescription or in-office procedure.
Yeah. A lot of those conversations where we're staying in the first bucket, the DIY category, those are happening during full exams, I feel like a lot. Typically, if you're elevating, like if you feel like your dry eye is bad enough to come back for a dry eye assessment, then I'm typically going to elevate you to bucket two and three. But I'm having these conversations around over-the-counter stuff in my full exams, in my annual exams. And I really do level with patients about like, all right, how bad is it bothering you? It may be that I see signs. Hey, it looks like you're a little prone to some dryness. Are you finding that in your everyday life? Okay, well, here, let me direct you. And it's usually the go-tos, hot compresses, lid scrubs, and artificial tears. In my clinic, I'm a little bit of a purist about preservative-free. I'm a huge purist about that. I feel like you can go to your store and find preserved eye drops. Like, most people have done that on their own. And so I'm very much an advocate for non-preserved. Refresh is just so well known that most patients have tried the preserved version of that. And so that's an easy one to say, well, all right, you're looking for the same thing. It should be close by, but you're looking for the preservative-free option. That's a big switch I make with patients. I'm also really big on, I'll say, like, okay, artificial tears are great, but it sounds like you're just using them once your eyes are already so dry. So let's start by having you do that proactively, you know, and it'll vary. So heavy computer days, let's see you do it before you start working on the computer and every 2 to 3 hours thereafter. And then we can see how much that helps. And I'm always like, okay, listen, if you understand I have an entire dry eye center here, like, if you have more symptoms and this is not cutting it, you got to let me help you. I can help you. So
you recently made a really great real video on your Instagram talking about your go-to artificial tear products. Would you mind sharing that on this episode too?
Yeah. I like the Refresh preservative-free digital, and that's a good one for computer users. I am also in my office, I stock Optase. And I sell a lot of Optase kits because it has the hot compress and the scrub. And then Oasis Tears, because I found that hyaluronic acid is really, really helpful, feels good, soothes the eye. But ultimately, artificial tears are like breath mints, right? Breath mints are going to cover up the stink for a little bit, but when they wear off, you still got stinky breath. And artificial tears are the same way. Like, it's going to make you feel better and clear your vision temporarily, but when they wear off, you still got dry eyes.
That is a great analogy that I may be able to pull out for people. So great. Thank you, Dr. Washington, for that.
Can you tell that I just level with patients about this all day long? Like,
that's really real talk. That's what this conversation is about. So
yeah.
And how many times a day would you say, I know you're using preservative free, so there's really no limit on artificial tear use when we're talking about something with a preservative absent. Mm-hmm. But I mean, do you give a number to patients where you're like, if you're using it XX times a day, I really think we need to go to a more advanced therapy for you?
Yeah, I think the threshold's about 4 times a day consistently. I mean, I think it's reasonable to have to use them a little more on heavy computer days, but if you're averaging out to always having to use drops 4 times a day or more, I can help you. You don't need to take drops that often.
Great. I'm totally on board with you. I find that to be a threshold where most people are getting pretty annoyed by their drop frequency use, and you're going to get to that area of frustration where you feel like this isn't working for you anymore. So, all right, great. Prescription eye drop time. There are now a number of prescription eye drops that are anti-inflammatory in their function. How do you talk to patients about what makes a prescription eye drop different than an artificial tear?
Well, the breath mint thing, artificial tears aren't really doing anything. That's a big one. And then I lean on Inflamadry. I'm like, you've got inflammation. And the only thing that takes care of inflammation are, you know, steroids, immunomodulators. We're talking about prescription drops right now, but IPL does, you know, but we have to do, again, you have inflammation, you have obstruction. What are we going to do for inflammation? Because artificial tears aren't doing a darn thing. Nothing. I mean, it's just a Band-Aid. And it's a great Band-Aid. It's a necessary Band-Aid. I still talk about them all the time, but we have to do something for inflammation. So that's the delineator, and I just do it. I'm just like, this is what we're doing. I have also set up my team to support me incredibly. I have a treatment counselor, so I'm coming into these dry eye evals looking, calling out my findings. I have a scribe and treatment counselor, and then she's sitting there and talking to them, writing down a daily routine. We have a whole education sheet, and she's making it simple for them so that we increase compliance and they actually can do their treatment. But that same treatment counselor, I just am like, I need an immunomodulator. Which one can I do? And she knows by their insurance and all of that. And so, like, I mean, half the time I'm not even calling it out. I'm just like, which one do we start with? So.
Got it. Wow. Yeah. That's great. You're having your staff support you is so essential to this, because these are lengthy conversations. You still need to be able to see patients. So we've got to have our staff very much involved to, to be a part of a team effort here. Yeah. It was interesting, before I jumped on the show today, I was reading Review of Optometry, and there was a great study that they had shared in a recent edition where our patients that are on prescription dry eye medications, whether that's Restasis, Xiidra, Cequa, you name it, they are not using them when we look at the studies at the frequency that they are prescribed. This study was looking at over 2,600 patients, and only 10% of them were using their prescription eye drops at that twice a day frequency as prescribed. 60% of them were using them like they would an artificial tear, as needed when their eyes started feeling dry. So how important is that conversation to you about patients understanding this is different than tears? You have to use them this number of times a day if you want to do anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's critical. Like, the education piece of this is so huge. And I call dry eye care, I mean, it's like extreme handholding. It just takes this a ridiculous amount of education and staff support and systems in place and to get people to have better outcomes. And so you really have to have a clinic where you have that kind of support, I think. I recently was consulting with someone and she was telling me that she just doesn't prescribe Restasis, Cequa, Xiidra because of the prior auth situation. And I was like, okay, but you have to get that figured out. Let me tell you about Cover My Meds. Let me tell you about this stuff, because you have got to do that, because if you don't address inflammation, you're not treating dry eye. So I think it's critical. You have to, you know, fight the good fight there and teach your team to do the same. And I'm happy to share my resources with folks on this podcast. If you email me, I have everything in Canva. And I will soon have a website where you can like download my dry eye trackers, but I'm trying to create these habit trackers for dry eye that patients can download and bring to their dry eye specialist and say, these are the things I've tried. This seemed to work for me. This didn't. And this is my current daily routine, and trying to help patients come to their dry eye specialist more prepared as well. Because I know that those things would really help me as you're trying to sort through what they've tried and what they haven't. Sorry, I feel like I'm getting off track, but these are all, I think it's relevant. I don't know.
We're doing great. This is a free flowing conversation. Like, that's what we're talking about. And there's, dry eye is so fluid and multifactorial, right? And there's new treatments becoming available all the time. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about in-office procedures, because you said that you have invested in IPL and you also have low level light therapy.
Yep.
We have neither at my practice. And I wonder how you designate LLT, candidacy versus IPL. Like, when is one more ideal than the other?
I'm a massive fan of IPL. Okay. IPL has changed dry eye for me in a way that nothing else has. Like many people, I've considered myself a dry eye person my whole career, because I sit and I listen and I take the histories, and I was doing amniotic membranes, and I used to have a pharmacy that I worked with that compounded and figured out autologous serum for me. And like, I have done the things in dry eye. And then IPL comes along and just takes people back, you know, 10, 15 years in their dry eye journey. And it, you know, improves their OSDI 15 points. And it, literally yesterday, I had a patient who's terrible rosacea, has lived with it his whole life, notched glands. I have to do epilation every few months. It's just so much irregularity with his glands, glands that when you image them, you can't even see. And he completed 6 IPL, 2 tear care. Of course, he's on immunomodulators. He's on a daily routine. But IPL takes people away from having to have these extensive daily routines. It gets them off of immunomodulators. this guy is, his glands came back. Like, I have the, and I'm going to present it in North Carolina when I talk there, but the before and after is ridiculous. I sent it to my tear care people. I'm like, look at this. His glands are, I mean, they went from being faint and gone to there again. So like IPL, it's not a hard sell for me anymore, because I'm like, there's nothing that works like this. It's incredible. Now, low-level light therapy is nice because it's allowing me to do my fits fives and sixes and give them an option. That's one of the things with IPL is you get into your fits, Fitzpatrick scale. One through four is fine. I think OptiLite maybe has indication on fits fives, but you have to be careful. You certainly don't want to cause, what is it, PIH or procedural like hyperpigmentation. So my fits fives and sixes, I'll do low level light therapy. And I also, it is wonderful for reducing post-procedure redness. So my esthetician uses it when she does like light peels. But for patients who have IPL and they're a little bit red, I will put them under the Saluma right after for their recovery. So okay. I'm using it quite a bit, but it's not my go-to. IPL is definitely my go-to.
I think that's so fascinating what you're sharing about the meibomian gland imaging showing a recovery. You know, there's a recent podcast I listened to that Dr. Chris Liebens had hosted, and he was talking about some similar findings that clinicians have had across the country where we can see what theoretically would be regrowth of glands. And it kind of has us questioning, all right, when we do meibomian gland imaging, is that the gland that you're seeing, or is that what's inside the gland? Like, can we really regrow a gland, or are we just refilling a gland? Like, what? Yeah. So there's so much that we don't know yet in optometry. But when we look at people where we say, oh, the glands are totally gone, I'll actually be like, maybe that doesn't mean that we're at a complete dead end. Like, maybe there is this path forward with the right tools.
There's a couple of mindset shifts I've had recently that just reminded me of. One is that I don't think meibomian gland imaging is at its final, like, I think it's almost like a photograph of the back of the eye versus an OCT. I mean, there was so much that came out when we began to be able to image the macula in that way that you can't see in photos, right? And I think the same is true of meibomian glands. What we're getting right now with these infrared images, it's incredibly helpful. But I tell patients this too. I don't know. I don't know if that gland's dead or if it's a gland in distress. I don't really know. But what I can tell you is I've seen glands come back. I've seen function come back. So I think it'll be interesting to see if my meibomian gland imaging goes to a different level to where we can really better assess what the glands are doing. The second ideological shift is that I've gotten away from hot compresses a lot. Okay. This is random. It doesn't have to do with the others, but I actually am taking a lot of patients off of hot compresses. Why? Because we are heating this entire area, sometimes down onto the cheek, in patients who have telangiectasias all over their lids and they have rosacea. And like, Jen, I mean, would you tell a rosacea patient to go to a sauna every day?
I'm telling you all this, right? Like, this is one size fits all. Like, everybody needs a brooder mask, but that's not necessarily true. A lot of our patients, like you said, do have rosacea. They probably always have, but we didn't know to diagnose and look for it yet. And now you look at your patients and you see all the telangiectasia, gentle pressure, liquid easily comes out. That is not a hot compress patient. I'm totally on board with you on that.
Yeah. So those are some ideological shifts that I have had recently that I think that is going to be an emerging trend. We're all going to say like, are hot compresses necessary in this patient? I don't think that they always are.
I am so excited to hear you're seeing these sorts of improvements and resolutions, because I can remember, you know, what, maybe 5 years ago when I had my meibomian gland imaging at the practice I was at, I was telling my patients, your glands are dead. We can never get them back. You know, and like to know that maybe that was wrong, that I was misinformed, that's so much more encouraging. And in healthcare, we are constantly in a state of evolution. There is so much that we don't know that is changed during our career. Remember when there were three layers to the tear film? You know, okay, everything that we thought we knew about dry eye has been blowing up like every 5 years. And this means that we just got to continue to stay educated, to stay up to date, because we can easily be a source of misinformation unintentionally to our patients if we aren't up to date with the newest research.
Yeah. And like, I mean, the amount of people that come to me on baby shampoo, oh, like, it's like,
that is a never-ending horse that has not been beaten down yet, but there's a lot more people talking about it than ever before. So in the next generation, I think we'll have doctors across the realm, even in ophthalmology, stop with the baby.
What I think we should start, you know how pharmacies have like take back the medicine day, how they have this big, I think we should start, you and I, take back Visine and baby shampoo take back.
We will buy this back from you at $2. I'm just kidding.
There's a
trade it in, and we'll give you some samples of a really great eyelid cleanser instead. What's your go-to eyelid cleanser?
I really love Optase. I use a lot of that. I also love the Ziegler stuff. The hydrate products I think are really great. We Love Eyes makes great stuff. Amy with Eyes Are the Story. There are so many good ones.
We're very lucky now to have so many great products, right? Like it didn't used to be like this, where we could have so many great resources and give our patients a variety of options.
I know. And new lids. I mean, I love new lids. We're using that in my aesthetics clinic. So she uses it to remove eye makeup before doing facials, which is great.
All right, let's talk about we've actually been talking a little bit about the future, where you see potential new research coming, but where do you see the future of your dry eye practice?
I mean, all I want to do is dry eye. So, I mean, I want to see some routine patients, but I would love to be doing dry eye and really be a regional destination for dry eye. I'm already getting patients from, I'm in Salisbury, which is north of Charlotte here in North Carolina. And I'm getting patients from Greensboro and Raleigh and Gastonia, but down into South Carolina and up to Virginia. We've had people call from Key West. I don't think that patient actually ended up coming in, but wanted IPL and from Key West, Florida. So I really love it. I love helping these folks that have seemingly tried everything. It's just the most fun. It is the best thing ever. And I have a couple of examples that I wanted to talk about too. So one that just happened recently, I had this maximum medical therapy glaucoma patient that was seeing retina and glaucoma at an ophthalmology practice. And really felt like she had tried absolutely everything, all the immunomodulators, all multiple rounds. Well, really can't be on steroids very much because of the glaucoma, and just had tried everything to the point where when she came to see me, she was like, well, I'm here because they said you're the best, but wouldn't let my team do anything. She's like, I just want to talk to the doctor because I just don't believe that she could help me. And I mean, just those poor, pitiful prostaglandin eyes, with the periorbital fat loss and incredibly irritated lid margins and thickened and telangiectasias everywhere. And just, those eyes, really, really, four or five, six glaucoma drops a day. I don't know what she's on, but a lot. And ultimately was pulled her off a lot of preserved things that they had her on. And blew her mind. She'd never heard of autologous serum. She'd never heard of amniotic membranes. She'd never, IPL and tear care, which is what I do for thermal expression. And, still was afraid. I don't know. That's a lot of money. It's all out of pocket. And I don't do this often, but I was like, listen, you need this so bad. I can make you better. You have to give me 6 months, but I will make you better. I will give you your money back. And I never do that. But and my team was like, you are crazy. And she was in for her fourth IPL a week or two ago and hugged me with white, wide open, clear eyes. And she said, people have been telling me my eyes look so much better. I feel so much better. You have no idea. I didn't think this was possible. And so, I mean, that's just so rewarding. That's what we're trying to do. And she's one of the biggest ones, but I have so many. I have a marathoner that would get 3 and 4 styes at a time. And between IPL and tear care and some of the other therapies, hasn't gotten a stye in 2 years. And then, and then the one I brought up that's in his 70s, terrible rosacea. His trichiasis and epilations have reduced. I mean, I still have to do them, but that's gotten better. His glands are coming back, but he's not on any topical therapy anymore. So, hi, Monica.
Just sharing some love for Dr. Denton and all these amazing patient outcomes she's sharing.
So, I mean, like when I first started, I felt like I had to sell all these advanced things I was doing. And now I just tell people the stories of my other patients. And I'm just like, you have to do this. You have to. Like, you don't understand. It's so helpful.
It's so incredible that, and again, we're practicing at a very fortunate time where there are treatment options that will help our patients. And we can have confidence in believing in those prescriptions and recommendations. If you use these drops, it is going to help. If we do this IPL procedure, your redness is going to improve. Your comfort is going to improve. And you don't have to qualify it and say, you know, we can try this, but your condition's not curable. Like we can speak with confidence that our treatments are going to help.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. It's amazing.
Dr. Denton, thank you so much for your time today. This was a great conversation about real world RN. I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people to go into their practice and really kind of think about making a treatment program of simplified approaches to dry eye and maybe even invest in some in-office procedures like you have. If someone does want to follow you, because I know you're building out the eye school and with a lot of resources for both doctors and patients, where can they learn more and get access to that?
Yeah, so I have a whole YouTube channel called Eye School with Dr. D, and I'd love to have you guys on that. It's about 80% patients, and the content is pretty patient-oriented, but I do talk about my clinical approach too, so I'd love to have you guys on there. And then with that, I have drmelaniedenton.com, which is going to go, I mean, it's live right now, but not all the downloads are on there, but I'm actually going to have a lot of downloads that I think are helpful for both patients and practitioners that you could use in your clinic, just to help patients track dry eye, even history forms. I have a lot of different things coming.
All right, you guys, thanks as always for tuning in. We love having you on this Defocus Media podcast episode, Dr. Denton. And if you guys aren't following her, her social media handle is at Dr. Melanie Denton now as well. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
I appreciate your time today, and we will see you guys back on the next episode.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars and make sure you follow us on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.